everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the very first episode of
Tag and Bag.
Come on, that's what we're here for right now. Thanks, everyone, for jumping onto this brand new project. I'm joined by the prolific, incredibly talented Jeff Stitzer. Jeff, thank you so much for agreeing to participate in this and for indulging me in my sort of wacky concept for what this podcast is going to hopefully become. Really appreciate you giving up the time, so thank you so much.
Absolutely my pleasure. I'm delighted to be here to chat.
Well, actually, that's, again, beautifully helped me with my segue there. We first connected several years ago when I had the opportunity to interview you, and I'd always had in the back of my mind, I was always thinking, wouldn't it be great if we could create an almost sort of generational perspective across a short form podcast where we discuss contemporary issues, things facing the games industry and the sort of wider creative arts industry. And you very kindly indulged me in my wacky pitch, and that's kind of led us to today. I know that recently you've been really connecting with a lot of your fan base, particularly those that know you from your work on Halo as the multiplayer announcer. And I was just wondering if you could maybe just catch some people up if they're not perhaps aware of what you've been working on recently or what's been going on. I know you've been really, really busy the last few months. Just give everyone a little flavor of kind of where you're at.
Well, in terms of personal stuff, I had to move from an apartment I was in a house because of all sorts of issues with the apartment complex. And I have also been working on a website, which I launched last Thursday. Throughout most of my career, I have been, I would say, primarily a theater person, being an actor and director on stage. I'm not doing that anymore for a variety of reasons. One of the most important being is that, as Judi Dench once said when asked what was the quality most necessary to sustain a career in the theater, she said, energy. And the idea of doing 8 shows a week now is not quite as attractive as it once was.
Absolutely.
In addition, there was a time when I first started where I was making all sorts of friends and getting to work with them over and over and over again. And as circumstances have changed and shows are getting smaller, many of my friends have left the business. That is not happening nearly as much. So I've kind of decided to sort of put that away for probably for good, still available in case a film or a TV episode or something comes up, which occasionally it does. I still do commercials. More recently, in the last couple of years, I've been doing cameos, which I love. They're great fun to do, and I've also been showing up at expos and fan conventions. I've done about 5 of those, most recently this past weekend here in Seattle.
We had one. It's such a great opportunity for people to connect with you, because I think you've had clearly an impact on a lot of people, especially my generation growing up, where we, you know, your voice, as I've referred to them before, your sort of dulcet tones, we've regularly been murdering each other to them for a long time. And I think that now, given the fact that you've refocused your energy and your career to the things that, you know, really you're passionate about and things you definitely want to pursue, the fact that you've now got an opportunity to really connect with your fan base, this is actually partly also where this idea came from. I think it's a really lovely opportunity for you in a slightly more long form format to connect with people and share your perspective. I know it's something I'm grateful for and something I think that others will be interested in listening to. So it's lovely just to hear that you've been able to continue to shape the arc of your career from a place of genuine passion and care. And like you said, you know, connecting with fans does seem to be something that's been both a joy for you, but also a surprise. Is that sort of fair to say in terms of the nature of that?
Yeah, very, very fair to say. The thing that's really great when you're on stage, you don't see the audience if you're lucky. Certainly when you're filming, the people who are going to eventually see you in a movie or a TV show, you have no connection with them whatsoever. Even doing cameos, I get a request to do something for somebody's birthday, but I'm not going to meet those people. So when I go to a convention, I actually do meet the fans of the game I've been involved with very much one-to-one. And that I love, because, you know, you can respond to them and their interests and the things that they want to know about the game and about you and all that kind of stuff. It's more of a conversation, which is certainly more interested than just throwing stuff at folks and hoping that maybe they'll find it interesting. It's easier for me to like get questions and go, oh, well, yeah, I've got a story about that. And, you know, that, so that's great. And I love meeting the fans. It's been incredibly gratifying. What I say, often very humbling. I did not know for the longest time that we even had fans in the game.
See, that it interests, that's fascinating for me to hear that, just because obviously I'm more on very much on the consumer side, right? Like I've experienced your work, you know, in its end form, right? Whereas I suppose I'd always made perhaps just the assumption that you would have an awareness of that and that you would know that sort of the indelible mark you've left on the games industry. And it's where I think the topic for our first podcast today, we're going to be talking about the advent of AI and the implications of that on voice acting and game development. I think it's never been more relevant, particularly when you consider how, take your role in Halo, for instance, right? The fact that you have this gigantic body of work that could so easily be sampled by an AI generator or a sophisticated program that could then replicate that. Has that ever been something that's crossed your path in terms of like something you're concerned about career-wise, that you could potentially find yourself in a position where they go, well, actually, whether it's because of ballooning development costs or because of scope becoming too big, that actually we could just replicate your performance with an AI sample of something? Is that
I don't think that it's sophisticated enough to really be able to do that.
Right.
I don't really know. I don't think anybody really knows, you know, where this might eventually end up. And as a result, I think it's given rise to an awful lot of panic and fear and, you know, hysteria, which I'm not inclined to indulge in if I can help it, because I just don't know whether or not it's going to become so good that I could be replaced. Now, if the union gets on the ball and, you know, works out some sort of a way where people could do that and I would still be reimbursed, it's like, yeah, go for it.
Sure.
You know,
at the end of the day, because I suppose ultimately then, your livelihood's being protected, but just in a different form, right? It's a different way.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been one of the big concerns, you know, is that it's a very interesting thing being a performer, being an actor, because the reimbursement that we tend to get is not nearly as wonderful as most people think. I mean, yes, if you're a superstar, if you're a Tom Cruise, you bet you're worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. I've been watching this Steve Martin documentary, and there's one thing that was at least on YouTube where he's sitting and talking to Martin Short about comedy and their stuff, and there's a huge window behind them that looks out over Manhattan, and you think, yeah, that'd be nice, but
you've ascended to that point.
Yeah, I mean, that only sort of happens for a relatively small portion of the acting community. So, you know, I think really it's just a matter of making sure that one can keep on living. That's the concern. But as far as like, you know, making a fortune, that isn't really the point. Most of us who do it, especially if we've been doing theater, sort of came into it knowing that we weren't going to become very, very wealthy. But you do still want to be recompensed.
Of course.
And
yeah.
You also want to make sure that the, you know, way your voice is being used isn't going to be offensive or inappropriate or...
Right.
That's my only big concern about AI, really.
Yeah, that I think some of the fear, given what you acknowledged there, that there is so many unknowns, there's so many things that there aren't perhaps clear in terms of extrapolating the potential future of where the technology will evolve. A lot of perhaps any anxiety or concern that exists, I think, is through misuse, not a developer simply cutting costs or an indie team suddenly being able to include voice acting, whereas perhaps they couldn't have the budget or scope to achieve that. It's less of that, I think, and more the idea of people's voices being used inappropriately or being co-opted to create sort of false versions of themselves. It's interesting, too, I think, because let's look at your work on Halo, for example. I was curious how much direction were you given when you were doing the medals and the lines as the Halo announcer? Were you given a great deal of specificity in terms of how to perform the lines?
No. Not only that, I wasn't often told exactly what I was saying. So, and for many of the metals, it's kind of like, I don't know what I'm saying, but no one's making me go back and do it again. The way I would record was I'd be given a page. It's different now because I just look on a monitor, a TV monitor, but I used to have pieces of paper on a stand, a music stand. I know, wild. And then what I would do is I would read each phrase or word or line, whatever it was, three times. And I would do a run on it. So I would do a section. So if I was going to do like, you know, blue team, go, red team, go, it'd be blue team, go, blue team, go, blue team, go, you know, and I'd go down a certain portion of the page. And then the writer who was there with the engineer would say, okay, let's go back on line six, you know, give me three more. And that was about all it was, you know. A little faster, I heard fairly often, because it's fair to say that perhaps I do tend to like to make a meal of these phrases. And, you know, meanwhile, gameplay is racing ahead of, you know, whatever nonsense and that I'm doing with work.
Yeah, Jeff, we're stacking these medals up, buddy. We need to get it moving. You know,
people do need to go home at some point.
Yeah. But,
they never gave me a whole lot of direction. That was kind of settled up front when I worked with Marty O'Donnell on creating the voice, because we went into it not really knowing what it was going to be. And I think the first thing, as I recall, and Marty has never disputed this, that I recall doing is being told Monster Truck Rally. That was where we started.
Right.
You know, Sunday, blah, 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 that kind of a thing. And then I had done in my audition, I think a little bit of an alien who was a little bit more malevolent, you know. And so when you put that together with some of that stuff, you know, you get unfrickin' believable.
But there is that sort of snarl to it, isn't there? There is that kind edge to it. And that... Would it be fair to say then, at least whether it was from the beginning or sort of as you progressed through the series, you felt you were able to put your stamp on it? There was an element of like you said, giving multiple versions of a line reading and then they kind of pieced together the one that
they absolutely chose what they wanted to use. So I had no control over that whatsoever. That's not unusual. You know, it's different on stage because when you're out on stage, once you go out there, in front of the audience, there's nothing anybody can do.
Yeah, you making your choices.
Can't give you a note like they would in rehearsal. I mean, you're in charge of your performance. On film and TV or in recording, you know, they can cut it up, splice it up, you know, put the beginning at the end and the end. I mean, you know, they can do any whatever they want. In some instances, I think that is sort of what happened, was they chose things that, you know, they liked and that I didn't really have any say over. But, you know, the people have been so nice and it's like, okay, well, they can hear it. I can't, you know, I mean, I've had these, but that doesn't mean that I'm really hearing it like somebody who plays the game from the outside.
In the context of when it will then be used, right? That is a different flavor, but it proves, I think you talking that through proves that there is such a need for the human component, for there to be that sort of creative iteration that I'm not sure. You spoke earlier about the idea that AI perhaps isn't sophisticated enough to achieve the equivalency of a real life performance. I certainly don't think that it is in a position to iterate in the way that you've just spoken to there.
No, not at all. The best example, as far as I'm concerned, is you know, think about these Star Wars films where they've taken an actor who's dead and basically tried to give a performance through footage that they had archived of them. I don't know about you, but I've never seen anything that looked like a human being or that was in any way close to being acceptable.
You can certainly...
somebody, that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford, the way they made him younger in the last Indiana Jones film, it's like, okay, that's impressive.
Yeah, you know? I think you can look at it perhaps and you go, well, that is an interesting technical achievement, but it does, I find, often can pull me out of the moment where perhaps I would be more emotionally connected as an audience member. I'm actually looking at it more from a, well, that was an interesting directing choice, or that was a great use of that tech, but I'm not necessarily then actually necessarily feeling the thing I should be feeling watching that moment.
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to be sitting and going, that's really incredible how they do that, because then you're not really in the story of whatever the film is trying to convey.
Yeah. And that's, how do you feel about that in terms of that idea of, say, for example, if we get to Halo 12 and it's, in 2060, how would you feel about your voice being sampled in that same way to retain a performance?
Well, here's the problem with that. It seems to me, I think we all have those things that we really, really love.
Right.
Part of the problem is we don't want things to change. The wonderful concert film with Joni Mitchell, because she started out and her sound was kind of folk, and eventually over time she began to move more into jazz, and her fans didn't want to go there. And there was a concert, I think it's on Shadows and Light, that album, where somebody that the people are screaming out titles of songs they want her to sing, and she makes some comment along the lines of, nobody ever said to Van Gogh, paint Starry Night again, man.
That's a good point.
Things have got to evolve. So it seems to me that, and I, this is not false modesty. I have no doubt there is somebody out there who could easily do something, if not akin to what I'm doing, something new that is every bit as, interesting or exciting or whatever,
Right.
and even quite a bit more. Think about the franchises where the trick is to replace the person. I'm one of those people. I'm old enough to think that Sean Connery is still James Bond, but a lot of
Sure.
people who love Daniel Craig would say, oh no, he's the one.
Yeah,
He
that goes
evolved.
in.
Look at Batman. Look at all those things.
Totally. That goes into a really tricky, very subjective conversation, doesn't it? Because you could look at, say, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man in the MCU, and I would look at that and go, well, that's irreplaceable. That you can't reboot that. He was indelible and identifiable as that part. There'd be the next person that go, yeah, but what about? And then they just laundry list the cast potential of that role, So I suppose that's potentially where AI does segue into kind of murkier waters, which is that, do you end up in a position where you get sort of a rampant fan base not wanting to accept a replacement of the Halo announcer, not wanting to have anyone but you be identified in that role, and the developers then follows through on that and end up just,
Well, I think we've already crossed that Rubicon, because there was one of the games where they added like three or four other people that you could choose to be your announcer. So they've already kind of dealt with that. I'm sure at some point down the road they're going to have to face this, because I can't imagine I'm going to be doing this forever. I'm at a fairly advanced age at this point. As far as using what I've done to try and create, a replicant version of myself, I'm not going to care. I'll be gone. So, that would be the sort of reason for doing it. That isn't bothering me. I'm a little bit more concerned about those people who are still around and how it might affect them, because that's basically the thing that seems really sort of wrong-headed and unfair when you take people who are still in a position to make money with what they do, and that's being stolen from them. That doesn't seem right to
Yeah,
me.
because it sort of it removes the art from the artistry, doesn't it? It becomes entirely a commercial proposition. It is, okay, well, we
Right.
want to,
Well, that's the, very much in terms of what you said. It's, the fact of the matter is that AI is operating on what's already been created. Doesn't really take into account what's going to be created or what would have been created by any individual performer, because everything we do comes out of all of our experiences. And I don't think there's any way to completely catalog that. There may be something from my past that has a huge impact on something I'm doing right now, and you're not going to know that because it hasn't had that impact yet. You know, you're not going to be able to sort of deduce that. I don't
No, because I suppose it could be subconscious, couldn't it? It could be an experience you've had that, you know, I've certainly had that where if I've been called upon, if I've ever done any theater work when I was younger to and required to perhaps utilize something almost Stanislavskian, you know, bringing in an emotional memory, I haven't perhaps realized the tools I have in my tool set that sometimes surprise me in the moment, because I haven't really realized that, oh, that's why I'm accessing that feeling, or that memory is informing a choice that I'm making. And again, that's something I don't think that an AI can ever truly replace. I think you've really hit the nail on the head there, Jeff, which is this idea that it's responding to what was. It's taking input of data that exists, not creating something unique that's original moving forward.
It's always going to be, you know, coming off that. Yeah. I mean, I could be completely wrong. As I say, it's one of these topics that's fascinating, a little bit scary, but of course we don't know where it's going to go or how it's going to end.
No, exactly.
I happened to be talking to my brother a couple of days ago, and he said, I think he'd gone online to see if he could find my website, and instead he found some group, 101 Sounds or something, that claim to be able to, you could write in anything you wanted and get my voice saying it. So I went to that site, and you know, you type in a line, and I think I just typed in like one of the lines from the game or something, and what came out was terrible. I don't know whether it was the device I was on, whether it would have been better if I had tried that on my laptop, but it didn't sound anything at all like me. So at least for now, it seems like they've got a little ways to go before being used by all kinds of folks for whatever they want to use it for.
Yeah, that's something I think as well, this logically sort of segues us now into that sort of the professional side of things, where, you know, what you've addressed there is obviously just it's a fan that's tried to, you know, perhaps with good intention, try to make something.
It looks like a business. I don't know what it is.
Oh,
but it
really?
Looks,
okay.
Oh yeah. It does not look like a fan. It's got a title. Oh, okay. And it offers other people, I think.
Then that has slightly more dubious overtones to it for me, in terms of, especially with the way you've described that and that the output was so poor, you know, that has a slightly more concerning.
I think when we go, oh, that's Jeff.
No good. You know? I'd hope that would be immediately obvious to anyone that's looking at that. Has sort of AI or discussions around it ever cropped up in any of the projects you've worked on in recent years, in terms of the production side of it, scripting? Has it ever really crossed your path as a working actor, or is it something you've perhaps just been more just aware of in the wider conversation?
I would say the latter. No, it's come up in terms of anything I've done. It's not like somebody said, hey, listen, can you read these, you know, ridiculous texts so we can, you know, piece together your sound and we can use it. It would, you know, nothing like that. No, I really haven't encountered it yet. And I think a lot of people haven't really encountered it yet. So I think that that's what makes it so daunting for folks, is, you know, their worst fears can kind of create future where, you know, basically anybody comes along and makes any kind of an impact and, you know, bingo, they're gone. And instead now there's this other, you know, person, actor, voice actor, whatever it is, that's taken their place. But so far, no, it isn't something I think about very often, except when I open up, you know, the computer and go onto the news sites and it seems to be popping up everywhere.
Sure. It is.
So, I think there are more important things to be talking about right now. But, you know, if we don't deal with certain issues in our world, then it's not going to matter if they can do
no,
AI.
I suppose on the scale of importance, you would consider it relatively low. Certainly if you're broadening that topic up to sort of, you know, wider issues. But I suppose, you know, you look at what's happened recently with the actor strikes and the writer strikes and a lot of that. I know AI was mentioned in terms of how writers and actors are protected, how they are compensated appropriately if AI is used. And I know that it's certainly not an issue that's going to go away, I think, even if it's something that perhaps isn't as prescient and current as of right now in 2024.
I think the problem has been in the past that our unions tend to start thinking about something after the fact, after it's become a problem.
Right.
You know, for instance, when I first started doing Halo, there was no such thing as a royalty or residual check
of any kind.
So not at all. Nobody did that. You know, so basically right. You paid a fee for your session and that was it.
And that was self-contained to the time that you'd spent recording. Yeah,
that was right. It. You didn't get anything else if the game went out and sold, you know, a billion copies. Mm. All you had was the fee for having recorded that. Now, if they wanted you back, which was the case with Halo, then you could say, well, we'd like a little bit more money in that fee, but it was still just the fee. And a lot of that was the union, I think, didn't understand what a huge market the video games were going to become. Now this is starting to happen with audiobooks as well, because again, that's like one of the fastest growing parts of our industry. And there are plenty of things that are not nailed down as far as the contracts are concerned for the people who do those. You know, I think though that seems to be more often what happens is that it's only when it starts to become a problem that, you know, a lot of people start to think, oh, we should address this.
Yeah, this is something that needs to be, you know, there isn't a rule for this. Let's make one kind of thing. It sounds to me like it's almost like the speed bump logic, right? They'll put speed bumps in the road after a major accident.
And absolutely.
You know, you'd think that given the fact that it is something that has, you know, it's not been an instant thing. It has been a slow burn and it's very much an emerging technology. But it does feel like despite that, it's not been a rapid uptake, I don't think. It's not suddenly taken over the industry.
No, so it hasn't. But the whole thing is really, I mean, I think what's going on is the technology is moving so quickly.
Right.
You know, I mean, when I was growing up, we had LP records and 3 television stations.
Right.
And, you know, if you missed a movie, you missed it. You know, you couldn't go get it.
You know what, actually, no, that's a fair point, actually. Yeah. As much as I say that I don't think AI specifically has sort of become this, you know, wide sweeping thing, technology and the games industry and performance certainly has had a rapid ascension in terms of its accessibility and the kind of things. Like, look at what you have. I mean, you have your studio at home. You know, the idea that you even have that kind of setup. Look what we're doing right now. Just the notion of this 10, 12 years ago would have been incredibly difficult. I'd be sending you a message in a bottle. You know, it's you know, so it is
absolutely,
it is fascinating. And I think actually it's more of a, I feel like 5 years from now, this would be a very different podcast.
I think you're right. I think that's absolutely right. You know? So that, are we going to make plans on that now?
Or do I don't know whether, was that some sort of really cheeky way?
5 years, ladies and gentlemen.
So a really cheeky way of me signing you up to something. That's really funny.
It's kind of great because you can just imagine if in 5 years from now, you know, basically both of us are artificial creations who are having a conversation.
Yeah, totally.
We have to be arguing. It's like, no, nothing ever came of that AI. You know.
But I'm a hologram.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. I mean, what an incredible way to wrap that up. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us for this very first episode of Tag and Bag. This is just our pilot, just our first effort, but we hope very much that you've enjoyed our conversation. And if nothing else, that's what this is going to be. A really spirited, lively back and forth, sharing our perspectives and sounding things out on contemporary issues. We're not going to pigeonhole ourselves. It's not going to be something that's just exclusively the games industry necessarily. We want this to be something that's really nice and broad and interesting. We are so grateful that you've tuned in and checked this out. Jeff, where can people find you? I know we alluded to this a little bit in the beginning, but just to wrap us out, where can people find you right now if they're interested in knowing what's going on?
Well, as I said, I just launched this website, jeffsteitzervoiceactor.com. And if you go there, you'll find there are all sorts of ways to connect with me. You can write to me. You can get a Cameo through there. It'll send you to Cameo. Does it send you there? I think it does. So that you can book a Cameo if you want to. Or I'm starting, I think, doing one-on-one Zoom calls, which we used to do in Cameo, and they don't now, for people who want to spend a little bit more time and having a real conversation like this. Trying to make myself a little bit more available, because I find that getting to actually talk to fans face to face is probably as entertaining and pleasing for me as anything I could be doing right now. So nice. That's where I am. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, you can obviously check all of that out. We'll be posting the links up alongside this episode, are both our video and audio flavors. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, on all the various socials at Burly Bird Media. Everything we post will be going onto there. Jeff, thank you again for your time. This is just episode one. And yeah, we will see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.